This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on Russia and the news. We begin with CNN reporting, Europe's energy crunch is giving Putin the upper hand. First graph. The warning was hardly veiled. Vladimir Chizhov, Russian President Vladimir Putin's tough-minded representative at the European Union, recently said that if Europe wants to resolve any future issues with its supply of natural gas quickly, treating Russia as a partner, not an adversary, will help. Professor, I believe that you have come to this same conclusion, that Russia, now in the position of providing natural gas for all of Europe for this winter, very expensive natural gas, but at least there is the promise there'll be enough. Russia's now in a position to request that Europe stop abusing Russia with sanctions and other hostile diplomatic remarks. Do you believe that Europe will go along with this? Is Europe practical-minded enough to say, you know, it's going to be cold and we're going to be out of a job unless we warm the homes of our voters? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I would have to respond that I wouldn't put the question, how did you put it, is Europe going to be practical enough? I would say that Europe has revealed that they are now in a position of, they have placed themselves in a position of dependence on Russia for energy. Years ago, I was looking at the plans of the pipelines. It was quite clear what was going on. Europeans are not stupid. They know, and I think that they have simply made a series of uninformed and craven decisions, which have put them in a position which they now realize is extremely disadvantageous to them. I mean, Germany is going to be obtaining more than half of her energy from Russia, and Russia expects reciprocity. They're not going to sell energy to Germany if Germany is making trouble for Russia. We'll see what the next German government does, but this is a problem of Europe's creation. This is not something that's magical, that no one expected that has happened in Russia.
All right, let's look at it from the Russian point of view. Europe wants something, and Russia's prices are going to exact a penalty for not having alternative supplies of energy for the winter. It seems fairly late to come to this conclusion, but that's the way democracies work. Is Russia in a position to request that the European Union and the members of NATO stop the sanctioning and bullying and bravado along the Russian frontier? Is that a reasonable diplomatic request given the precariousness of Europe's position?
I think it is. If I were a Russian, I mean, I would have a completely different policy if I were a Russian, in a different domestic policy. But if I were Mr. Putin, I would say, well, now I've been dealt by Europe. I've been dealt a very good hand, and I'm going to play it, and I'm going to win as much as I can. And one of the prices is going to be that the Europeans stop reprimanding Russia, that they stop calling attention to violations of human rights and so forth in Russia, that they stop sanctioning, basically that they stop messing with Russia, and that they start just treating this as a, you know, a reciprocal cash for gas exchange.
All right, we move on to another quandary. This is CNBC reporting. After the gas crisis, the Arctic could be Russia and Europe's next flashpoint. Point. On Wednesday, the European Union put forward proposals that could see it trying to ban any tapping of new oil, gas, and coal and gas deposits in the Arctic. Two, the EU says it wants to protect the region from further disruptive climate change. Three, but countries like Russia derive economic wealth from the region's hydrocarbons and other natural resources. As you know, Professor, Russia has a vast portion of the Arctic hydrocarbons available, and technology and the warming climate over this next century makes more and more of that likely to be tapped by Russia. They're starting now. They have an Arctic military base. They've got nuclear-powered icebreakers. In other words, Russia's ready for global warming. It suits Russia. So Europe is chastising Russia because it's going to explore its territory and its ocean?
Well, I've spent a lot of time looking at maps of the northern coast of Russia, and it's quite extraordinary how close it gets up to the Arctic Circle. A city like Archangel, which was long the only port that Russia had, or Murmansk, which is where we delivered goods during World War II, are extremely difficult to get to, extremely perilous voyages. And if the Europeans expect to have any clout at all, they're going to have icebreakers and all these sorts of things, too. It's rather like the first question that you asked. If Europe is going to be strong with respect to Russia, they have to have their economic house in order. They have to figure out how they're going to get energy, and they have to build up their military to a point where the Russians will find it intimidating and stop expecting the United States to do that for them. But the Arctic, obviously, I mean, the Russians own it. The Chinese are trying to go in there. Canada is another example of this. What are the Canadians going to do when all of a sudden all kinds of Russian vessels are transiting their waters? Are they going to build a navy?
The puzzle then.
Is Europe going to build a navy?
The puzzle then. Europe is making demands of Russia. Europe is wagging a finger at Russia. I come to one more headline. This is from an op-ed that appeared in the Atlantic Council website. Europe's new Russia policy must focus on human rights. That is a consistent position at the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council is extremely sympathetic to the NATO position, which has combat troops rotating through the Baltic states, has what you'd have to say air combat patrols out of Poland routinely, watching Russia with surveillance techniques. All of that suggests that human rights is now the burning issue for the European Union. Have they noticed, Professor, how cold it gets in January?
Well, I think they will notice. And human rights, all we have to do is think back to the Clinton administration, if we're old enough to do that. Remember that Clinton campaigned against the butchers of Beijing. And then at the end of his term in office, he admitted China to the World Trade Organization unconditionally and without expecting any changes. Why did he do that? Because it was expedient. It was the path of least resistance. And I think that the Europeans, and for that matter, Americans, may very well start thinking in a more, quote, realistic, end quote, way about everything from violations of free speech, control of the media, to actual murdering and genocide. Sadly, this is human nature. Now, obviously, the right thing to do is to do everything possible to promote human rights. But it has to be done as part of a consistent and well-thought-out series of actions which cover all the fronts. We can't just sort of focus in on one thing and then forget about others. If you look at our policy on human rights toward Belarus, it's having the effect of driving Belarus, Minsk, closer to Moscow, which is not in Europe's interest. It's not in Belarus's interest. It's only in Russia's interest. Yet because of our rather unreflective approach to human rights, this is what, in fact, we are causing. And the same could be said about the other issues you're raising.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.